The FC podcast is proudly brought to you by beer52.com. And as a listener to the show, we would like to reward you with a free case of craft beer. All you need to do is pay the $2.95 delivery. Head on over to beer52.com/MFC and order your free case today. Beer 52 is a 5-star rating in Trustpilot, so it's easy to see that their members love their service. So head on over now to beer52.com/MFC and order your case.
Beer. Oh, it comes off Hughes. A wee bit better. It is McHugh!
Hello and welcome to the MFC podcast. Tonight, myself, Jay and Buster, for the first time in 2019, we'll look back at a couple of games over the festive period. We'll preview 2019 and what lies ahead for Motherwell. We'll discuss the signing of Ross McCormack and we'll also take a look back in 2018 and the year that was. Guys, happy new year and welcome along.
Cheers.
I do, thank you.
Well, Jay, as always, I'll start with yourself and we'll have to. The Kilmarnock game in Boxing Day to start with, I think. We'll make it fairly brief. It was a pretty nondescript game, I suppose. More shaped on three first-half injuries for Motherwell, which, strangely, actually gave us some sort of balance to the team after a pretty confusing starting 11. And then Jordan Jones's cross, finding the net just before half-time to win the game for Kilmarnock 1-0. There's not really a great deal that can be said about that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I would agree about the, you know, it gave us balance. I think, you know, if anything, it just kind of made any, you know, any great discussion over the game a little pointless. Because at the end of the day, it's something I've never really seen before. You know, you get two centre halves taking off very, very early on. And then the replacement centre-half has to go off as well. It was one of those things where, after that, whatever happens, I don't think you can really, you know, be too critical because it's just completely unforeseen circumstances. What I would say is it would have been interesting to see at that point how the team would have went. You know, I don't think there was anything confusing about it once you saw how we'd lined up with Freer kind of in the hole, just to see how that would have went. Obviously, we never got the chance. And it's, you know, the old cliche of, you know, it could have been an entirely different game. Had the substitutions not happened. But to go down, you know, 1-0 to a side flying as Kilmarnock are in the manner we did, you know, it's disappointing to lose any game, but to concede, you know, a sort of a fluky cross that's crept in at the back post and suffer those injuries in the first half, I don't think it was a game that anybody could have came away, you know, too downheartened, or certainly not as downheartened, you know, as we were after, for example, the St Mirren game.
Possibly raised an interesting question. As we said, I don't think I've ever seen three players being subbed before the half-hour mark. I think you noted that we had played about 34 minutes on the clock, but only about 7 or 8 minutes of actual football time. It was most of it spent treating injured players. That, I would say, is almost justified. You'd, three enforced changes in the first half an hour, you're left with no options from the bench. It gives the opposition team a massive advantage without actually gaining that advantage on the field of play. Should you be allowed a fourth sub, for instance, if you've got three players injured in the first half? I know there'd be arguments that this could be exploited, but surely you would only make three subs in the first half if it was completely forced upon you.
I mean, I think I'd be against any kind of changes to it. I mean, I think that it could be exploited. You know, how do you ascertain when someone is you know, seriously injured or not? I think it's too complicated. I would also, you know, at the end of the day, injuries by their very nature, whether you've got a substitute ready to come on or not, are going to, you know, give the other team in theory, you know, the advantage. You know, if Louis Malt had picked up an injury for us in pretty much every game he played for us in the first 5 minutes, the opposition gains an advantage, even if we have, you know, someone like Ryan Bowman to come on for him. So, you know, substitutions by their very nature, if they're not tactical, are in theory handing the advantage to the opposition. And I think it'd be far too complicated to start, you know, bringing in an additional sort of sub for those kind of circumstances.
I agree. It'd be a very difficult one to call, but I'm kind of a traditionalist as well. So I don't even like VAR. You know, it gets 99% of the decisions right, but nah, fuck that. It takes a wee bit of the chat out of the game. But you know, the fourth sub sounds fantastic, especially when it's in a scenario like yours in that game. But nah, it's not something I think we should be changing.
So not even something like the concussion rule that was mentioned, I think, ahead of the World Cup, that you almost kind of, when it's an injury like that, I suppose it's so open to manipulation, but it's just, I just felt that it was a pretty unfair thing for the whole game was based around these three injuries. That was the main talking point. There wasn't much between the teams, despite the fact that Kilmarnock are obviously enjoying such a wonderful season. There just was so little in the game, and that was the turning point, these three injuries. So, an unfortunate one. And then we would obviously go into Takis on the 29th of December, 3 days later. And again, the team changed around a bit. Many changes were forced upon Stephen Robinson. And what we got was a lot better. Buster, guys playing in natural positions, most notably Elliot Freer, who had a fantastic game, really, really offered a great deal of threat down the left, caused Aki's untold problems. And then always, obviously as well, Tom Aldred popping up with two goals. And not only two goals, but two great finishes as well.
Yeah, it's great to see Tom Aldred, you know, score a couple of goals. Before the game, I think, you know, I'd been a bit critical of the headers and headed attempts he'd had at goals in the previous games. You know, luckily these ones were on the volley, but great to see him, especially, you know, it's a wee derby game against our rivals and their patches. Great to see him pop up with two goals at that point. And as you says, Elliot Freer, I thought, was absolutely fantastic. He's a winger, so he's going to be inconsistent. He's going to be terrible at left wing back when you're playing there. He's not going to be the greatest tackler in the world. So, you know, when we've tried to squeeze him in there, I think it's really shown where his weaknesses lie. But, you know, that Saturday, for example, you know, last Saturday, whenever it was, gave him the ball, let him run at people. Granted, you know, if somebody's got the better of him, his head's probably going to go down. That's his game. That's wingers' games in general. It's, you know, the better ones play at a higher level who, you know, when they don't get past their man, keep their head up, try again until the day. But Elliot Freer, I think, is a very good winger at our level. I remember, you know, when Robinson first took over the team, all the chat was about how many crosses we'd put into the box. You know, even if the results were poor, we'd 17 crosses into the box. See, here the last year, I couldn't even tell you three crosses that we put into the box, because we didn't, you know, we don't have that in the way we were set up. At least we don't have that in our game. The wing backs, you know, might punt out of the box from deeper, but other than that, we were just constantly launching it forward. Whereas, you know, even if we are playing directly, if we've got a winger in the park or two wingers in the park, the guys can go closer to the byline, put it in the box, and then Elliot Freer for me was man of the match there. Tom Aldred bagged both of the goals and, you know, played relatively well. I thought Hamilton's goal showed their weaknesses a wee bit, you know, but Elliot Freer for me was absolutely brilliant, and it's great to see him actually play it in the left as a left winger, left midfielder, whatever you want to call it, where he didn't have to concentrate too much on his defensive duties as he had been as a left wing back.
And Jay, this was undoubtedly a lifeline for Elliot Freer, who for all the world looked like he would be on his way out of the club. He's given an opportunity thrown in after being basically ignored for large parts since his stint at left back. He's come in and done very, very well there. And now you would actually hope to see him given at least a chance in the back end of the season to prove that he deserves to stay at this football club.
Well, he absolutely should. I mean, I agree with absolutely everything Bust has just said there, in particular that the idea of getting crosses into the box, we've almost actively went against that philosophy this season. It's, well, I suppose unless you consider getting balls into the box, launching them from, you know, your centre-half position in that direction. At the end of the day, Elliot Freer, I feel really, really sorry for him. I think he gets a hard time from a lot of fans. Joe McKelvey, who was on the podcast last time, you know, sort of said about the fact that he likes Freer and thinks he's a good player. I agree with that. I think he's a good winger at our level. Yes, he's inconsistent. Marvin Johnson was inconsistent, as was Lionel Ainsworth, as was Chrissy Humphrey. That's what makes them, you know, wingers at our level. You know, if they were consistently performing well, they would be nowhere near Motherwell, because, you know, a winger who can go past people and put a great ball into the box time and time again, they go to the top of the world of football. They don't, you know, ply their trade at Fir Park every week. So to have a guy who is a, you know, went on his game as a very good winger at our level, but has that inconsistency that's natural for wingers around our level, to then continually play him at wing back, it's just absolutely pointless. And there's this kind of cycle that happens with Elliot Freer where he has played at wing back. It naturally doesn't work because that's not his position. So his whole, you know, his whole game of trying to get past someone and putting a ball in from near on the byline, that's completely taken away because his starting position is so far further back. So he's never a wing back in a million years. So he's played there. It doesn't work for him. The fans got on his back, or some of the fans got on his back. He's criticised. Robinson then has an excuse to drop him because he's not, you know, playing well at wing back. He sits on the bench, you know, as you said yourself, Sparrow. He kind of sits out for weeks on end. Then he gets, you know, a wee cameo here or there where he's actually played as a winger, because what tends to happen is he makes an appearance from the bench when we're chasing a game or we actually want to, you know, play with wingers. Suddenly plays well, forces his way into contention, and then finds himself back at wing-back again, and the whole thing just repeats over and over and over again. The only way, I like Elliot Freer, I think, as a winger, it would be a really good asset for us. But if he's going to be continually played at wing-back, it would actually be better for his career if he was to move on, because he's been wasted. It's as simple as that. It'll be interesting to see whether, I know we'll obviously discuss McCormick joining later on, if Ross McCormick's coming here to play, you know, ahead of say Curtis Main, but in the same, you know, the same setup and the same style of play that we've been playing to now, then not that is possibly one of the most pointless signings ever. If Ross McCormick joining means that we are going to look to be a little more creative, a little more attacking, getting the ball down and playing it, and that will therefore mean that Elliot Freer will get more chances in the left wing, then I think that's a great thing for everybody involved. But if we're going to continue the way we're playing, the hoof ball, the back three with wing backs, Elliot Freer should actively look to move in January for the sake of his own career.
First, I know we're whizzing through these games, just given we've got so much to talk about tonight, but the result was hugely significant looking at the league table as well. We've pulled clear of Hamilton. Dundee and St Mirren now look like there's very little chance that they'll get anywhere near us in the league this season. It's been a fairly frustrating December. I know there was a good result at Perth. We've finished with a good result at Hamilton. In between that, there was a fair amount of guff. The Celtic game at Fir Park possibly excluded from that. Now is the time that we look up the table rather than looking over our shoulders and worrying about that relegation battle that, for the most part of December and probably bits of November too, we thought we were very much going to be part of.
I think you're right there, and you know, I would like to hope you would be right there. As you say, if you look at the table, I think we're something like 8 points behind Hibs and 8 points clear of St Mirren, if no 9 points either way, but you know, it's close either way. So I think what we really need to do is another couple of wins, you know, and then we can really start to think about catching whoever ends up in eighth position and just taking it from there, really. But you know, it's a sort of cliche of football. We've just got to take it one game at a time. See, you know, if we can pick up the wins, see where it takes us. And as you say, you aim to win each game, you're going to pile up the points anyway. But the results there certainly don't leave us looking over our shoulder as much as we probably could have been, or a lot of people feared we would be. So it's decent to get a wee bit of a barrier in there. And as you say, hopefully going forward we can build on that.
And Jay, it wasn't just the team in the league position that was a very important result for. A result for Stephen Robinson as well, who certainly was commanding a fair amount of criticism. We'd obviously lost the Celtic game, then lost at home to St Mirren. 4 days later, you lost a home game to Kilmarnock. So the pressure was really, really mounting on the manager. And had he not get these 3 points, remember in that game, Dougie Imrie did put Hamilton ahead. I struggled to see how he could have come back from that. So it's amazing how 3 points and a pretty positive performance as well can just completely change the complexion.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, as we discussed on the last podcast, I had some sympathy for Stephen Robinson, because I think there were many players who perhaps were at fault as well as Robinson. But as we kind of discussed at length last time, it was Robinson's decision to rest players in the way he did at Celtic Park that then opens him up for criticism if he then went on to lose those 3 games, because it would have just made an absolute mockery of that decision or that lineup at Celtic Park if he then, you know, went into these 3 massive games and took 0 points. To go a goal down at Accies and come back the way we did, and also do it in quite a good performance with, you know, the chips being down a little bit, you know, not just a goal behind, but also with the team that we had to put out, bit of a makeshift side. Perhaps it's not just a case of buying himself some time, but he deserves maybe a little bit of plaudits for that, because, you know, there was guys in there that were signed in the summer. You know, I'm thinking of the likes of Taylor Sinclair, for example, who, yeah, maybe switched off a little for the goal and played Imrie on side. But I think over the last couple of games he's featured, he started to actually look as though he might have something to offer. Whereas, you know, a month ago, I would have been more than happy to see him go in January. So perhaps maybe even, Robinson, his kind of 12 to 18 signing policy, which I still think was heavily flawed, has maybe, you know, gathered some credit from the fact that, you know, a quite a heavily weakened side was still able to get the job done at Accies. And you're right, because the winter break could have came at such a bad time had we lost that. You know, if we were getting into these, 3 weeks without a game, having just lost all those games in the trot, then I think that the knives would have been out for Robinson, because there'd be nothing else to talk about. You know, okay, we may have then announced McCormack, but I think, you know, the general discussion would be negative. It would be, you know, pissed off because of that run of games. And there would have been a lot of time there to really kind of stew over it and start to get Robinson's back. Whereas, you know, the combination of a win at Accies and the news about Ross McCormack actually puts people a little bit more positive. There'll still be, you know, folk mourning about Robinson, there always will be, but I think it has now allowed us to hopefully get a few players back to fitness, do some more business, and as I said earlier, hopefully come back after the winter break looking like a different side, looking to, you know, achieve different things on the park other than just launching the ball forward, because that's still key for me. You know, at the end of the day, if we continue to do what we've done up until this point in the season, then it makes no real difference what happened at Accies and whether we've signed Ross McCormack or not.
Okay, he's been mentioned about 18 times already in the podcast. We might as well go on and talk about Ross McCormack. Firstly, the transfer window started with a few departures, most notably Ryan Bowman heading for Exeter City. Ross McLean has joined Falkirk after a loan spell at Morton. Then there's a few young players have left. Barry Maguire has been out on loan to Queen of the South. But even prior to the Accies game, there was this strange rumour and what seemed like the most unlikely possibility of Ross McCormack coming back on loan until the end of the season. Bearing in mind that McCormack went to Aston Villa for £12 million, rumours have it that he's on 40 grand a week at Villa, and that's a reduced wage given they lost the Premier League status. It just seemed like absolute pie in the sky until the Saturday at New Douglas Park. There he is sitting beside Alan Burrows in the stand, and suddenly it became a bit more likely, and that's kind of continued right through to yesterday and the announcement that indeed Ross McCormack has signed until the end of the season. A pretty blockbuster signing, it must be said, Buster, and one that we can, I think most people are quite rightfully excited about.
Yeah, I think so. As you say, you know, it was one of those ones where the rumour started somewhere online, somebody read somewhere that somebody knew, somebody had said that Ross McCormack might be here, whatever, and then as you say, he's on the telly. Well, you heard rumours when we were in there that he's sitting in the main stand or whatever, and you see it on the telly. It is no doubt a fantastic signing, and he's no doubt going to be our most talented player there. But it's, you know, the circumstances around about it are kind of strange. I'm in no way putting a dampener or anything on it here, by the way. I'm just saying, as you say, he's went for £11-12 million a couple of times in his career. Something's no clicked for him at Villa. He finds himself sort of, well, again, if you watched his interview when he first signed, he mentioned a few times he's just desperate to feel like one of the lads again, get a bit of banter and be part of a team. He mentioned it two or three times, and it seemed as if he's found himself as a bit of an outcast at Villa. He's, you know, no enjoying it there. He's maybe been, you know, everybody heard about the sort of issue he had with his gates or whatever, whether that was true or no, but everybody heard about it. So he's probably just been, you know, at that point, told, don't bother coming back. They've loaned him here, there and everywhere. You know, he's went halfway around the world twice. And it's undoubtedly a massive coup for ourselves, but it's just strange how these things come about. And I've got no doubt, you know, as I say, he's going to come in. He's probably going to be our best player for the next 6 months. And I'm really looking forward to it. But he just seemed like a wee bit of a lost soul, you know, like a wee guy missing his pals, basically. And he knows one or two, you know, the lads, for example. I heard that they were good pals when we were first here together. You know, so hopefully, if he starts to enjoy himself, he'll really enjoy his football, and he put in the performances and score the goals, and you know that can only be beneficial for ourselves as well.
Yeah, Jane, must have touched on it, the fact that it's not worked out for Ross at Aston Villa. He's obviously been out on loan to a couple of clubs in Australia. He's now back in Scotland, and if you'd suggested at any point over the last 11 years that Ross McCormack was coming back, you would have possibly laughed at the person, and if it was you that would said it, I would have been asking how many pints you'd had before saying it. So it's kind of telling that there has something went awry there. His attitude doesn't seem to have been the best, particularly his time at Villa. There's talk of Steve Bruce saying that he couldn't get him at training and things like that. That's obviously not very good for a professional footballer. But this is a chance at redemption, if you will. He can come here, he can enjoy his football. It's a familiar environment. He's beside his family in Glasgow now. This could work out very, very positively. I look at Stephen Naismith and how he's got on at Hearts after enduring a slightly troubled time down south as well. He's almost found a new lease of life. He's back in the national side, scoring goals for the national side. This could be very similar for us, and if it does come off and we do get the Ross McCormack, we all know it exists in there somewhere, then I can't see any negatives to it whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I mean, I do agree. I think Stephen Naismith is the perfect example. And in fact, I would, obviously, I've no idea what goes through Ross McCormack's head, but I wonder whether, you know, he would have seriously entertained the idea of coming back to Motherwell had Naismith not had the impact he's had at Hearts and, you know, forced his way back into the Scotland side, because they're both 32. You know, we're not talking about an ex-Motherwell player coming back to wind down his career. He will still have, you know, aspirations to play in at least the Championship down south. You know, it's obviously not worked out for him at Aston Villa. I don't know, you know, in terms of attitude, you know, I don't know a great deal about, you know, his spells at other clubs down south, the likes of Leeds and Cardiff. As a Scotland fan, I do remember plenty of, you know, circumstances where there was, you know, great, you know, negativity over the fact he wasn't included in certain squads. And at that time, I don't remember there being any sort of suggestion about attitude problems or anything. It just seems to have been since his spell at Villa, as far as I've been aware of any sort of talk about sort of attitude issues. So, you know, whether that is an underlying problem or whether it's just one of those situations where a player doesn't fit at a particular football club, I really can't be sure. But I think Stephen Naismith will have played a big, big part in this. I think as a 32-year-old, looking for somewhere to go and try and get his career back on track and perhaps also force his way back into the Scotland side. I think he will have looked at what Stephen Naismith has done at Hearts and the way that's panned out for him. And I'd be very surprised if that didn't play a part in him joining us. And I do agree, I think, in terms of the signing of an individual player, I completely agree. I don't see there being any negatives. You know, by all accounts, we're paying less for McCormick than we were for Salmon. I don't know how much that's true, but that seems to be the chat. But by and large, it's certainly not breaking the bank. It's within our budget. So we've moved on one striker in Ryan Bowman, got money for him and brought in, you know, a calibre of forward as a replacement, if you like, that isn't going to break the bank, that is far beyond anything I think we would have expected, whether it be in the summer or at this point in the season. The only issue I have, as I said earlier, is we have to change the way we play. It will serve absolutely no purpose to have Ross McCourt. Yes, he might chip in with a great free kick or a long-range drive here or there, and he probably will still score the odd goal. But I think if we're just going to continue to play the absolute shitfest football that we have been playing up to this point in the season, long balls, playing with wing-backs that, you know, not attacking enough, you know, ruining guys like Elliot Freer and being overly concerned with being defensive, then that won't be to Ross McCormick's strengths. And I think we will waste the opportunity that we have here. I think if we're going to go into this second half of the season, we have to be, you know, braver. We have to take more risks. We have to be prepared to go way back four, to play with wingers, to get the ball down, to try and create things. Because if we do that, Ross McCormick will score goals. And if he scores goals, then, you know, it'll be great for everybody involved, particularly if he has the same sort of impact that Stephen Naismith has had at Hearts.
And I've mentioned we've already seen a number of departures. That's only one player brought in, a very good one and a player with a great reputation. But we need to build on that one player. And I saw Alan Burrows mentioning that this player number two is lined up. But you wouldn't be too surprised to see it go as high as six or seven new faces in this window and eradicate somewhat the damage done by what was a fairly poor transfer window in the summer.
I think that, as you say, I don't think I'd be surprised if it went that high. I think ideally we're probably looking at maybe three or four of a good quality. Now, we've obviously overshot the mark massively with Ross McCormick, you know, in terms of quality, because, as I said, you know, I don't think there's any doubt if he applies himself as we know he can. He said, you know, he's better than he knows he's a better player than he was 10 years ago. And if he comes back as a player he was 10 years ago, we're laughing. So I think that if we get three or four in who are decent quality and fill the spaces that basically 90% of the fans think we need filled, we'll have a very successful transfer window. And you know, as I say, I don't know if we're finished with departing players or what, but if we went in with another three or four quality players, I think you'd be very happy getting into, you know, the Scottish Cup, for example, the next game, and then the remainder of the league.
I mean, I've got to be honest and say I would be surprised if we brought in six or seven. I'd be very surprised. I think, you know, one thing for all the criticism Stephen Robinson gets for certain things, I think he gives the signs at least that he learns from his mistakes, you know, in terms of resting players. We discussed that, you know, obviously with that Celtic game, when you look at this point last season, the fact that we didn't really rest players and paid the price. I think he does seem to learn from his mistakes. And I think the idea of fleshing out the squad with six or seven mediocre players, when you could bring in maybe two or three quality first team players that are going to make a difference week in, week out on the park, I think he'll favour that. So I've got to be honest and say I would be probably very surprised if we bring in six or seven faces in this window.
Yeah, again, that would be, I think, everybody's ideal approach. But as you say, I know he shows he's learned from mistakes at times. I just wouldn't be surprised. And it's the way the Mull runs a football club. Maybe not in the Januaries, I suppose. Maybe not in the Januaries, but you know, there's obviously a lot of turnover at times, so it wouldn't surprise me. But I think, as you say, everybody's probably hoping for three or four quality players rather than seven mediocre rubbish players.
And Buster, in terms of players going out, I mentioned Ryan Bowman and Ross McLean. Just quickly on Ryan Bowman, a player that gave his all in a Motherwell jersey in his couple of years here. It was one of these ones here. I don't think... I certainly wasn't heartbroken to see Ryan Bowman go. I think it fitted into our system quite well, particularly last season, and contributed a few goals. Was part of a successful team in terms of the cup competitions. One of these ones where you won't lose much sleep over his departure, but at the same time, you wish him all the best going forward, don't you?
Ah, definitely, yeah. As you say, these... Yeah, I've seen a lot of debate about his ability over the last, you know, 5 or 6 days there, but I don't think MD can question his effort and his enthusiasm. You know, as you said, he was great fodder for Louis Moult. Even when Curtis Main was, you know, having a great 3 or 4 months, the two of them worked really well together initially. Unfortunately, you know, that didn't last, and it was plain to see by 3 months ago that wasn't the way to go. But you know what? Regardless of how good or bad or whatever you think he was, MD that can noise up both sides of the arse cheek that is the Old Firm, or the arse that is the Old Firm, both sides of the cheeks. Yeah, he's a good guy in my book. You know, the seethe for either side there was unreal, and even. As Motherwell announced his departure, there were still Rangers fans commenting on it. It's absolutely fucking brilliant.
And Jay, on Ross McLean and Barry Maguire first, a guy that's had a taste of the first team, to Queen of the South, a side that are doing well in the Championship, will be pushing for the playoff positions again this season. A good opportunity for him to get some much-needed game time and hopefully kick on. And then there's Ross McLean, who also get a taste of the first team. Then he's been kind of hampered by injuries. He's had his spell at Morton, where he seems to have done fairly well. Come back and straight away signed by Ray McKinnon, who took him to Morton, ironically. Has taken him to Falkirk, and his time at the club has come to an end. I think... Well, maybe that regard Ross McLean as someone that we never quite got to see kick on. He promised quite a lot early on, and then opportunities were limited. He would then be hampered by the injuries and the loan spells. We thought maybe we'll get him back, maybe we'll see what he's actually made of, and it's just not really happened.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, with McLean, I think he's probably one of those players that you'll possibly always consider as a, you know, a what if. You know, if he hadn't got the injuries when he did, you know, he could be a first teamer for us just now. You just never know. But, you know, all the best to him. I think he's one of those guys where it's obviously just, you know, over the last, it's been an extended period of time at least. It's not a knee jerk reaction. I think it's probably the right time, because the last thing you want to do is to continue to hamper someone like that's career by sort of, you know, continually dangling the carrot at the end of the stick, you know, the idea that, well, you might still have a future here and sign him up again and send him out on loan and continually do it over and over again and then finally release him, you know, at 23 or whatever age, by which point, you know, he's already a little bit behind on regular first team action elsewhere. So I think it's probably the best move, all things considered. The Barry Maguire one's an interesting one because, you know, obviously in terms of his own development, I think it's a great move for him. It's a good club to go and play first-team football with. Perhaps I'm looking a little too much into it, but I would like to think that if we're going to be continuing with the back three in the coming year, having just lost, you know, Dunn, McHugh and Bulu to head knocks, that we wouldn't be sending, you know, a young centre-half out on loan unless we were confident that we were able to kind of combat that. So hopefully that's maybe a sign that we might be going with two centre-halves in a back four in the coming months, but that might be wishful thinking.
What we'll do is we'll look back on 2018 briefly, and we'll finish the podcast by looking ahead to what we hope will happen in 2019, what we expect to happen in 2019. 2018, obviously, the obvious highlight of that would be the the run to the Scottish Cup final and beating Hearts and Aberdeen in particular on the way to our second successive domestic final. There was Peter Hartley's equaliser against Rangers at Fir Park. Danny Johnson's one against Celtic at Fir Park. And it just generally it was, particularly last season, was it was very, very positive. And then we had the summer of major overhaul again, and this season just hasn't started in any way what would have imagined, given the successes of last season or the relative success of last season. So we're maybe coming into a bit of a tipping point, Jay, where Stephen Robinson has led the club so well to almost a top six finish, two cup finals, and then has had to deal with a fair bit of scrutiny and a fair bit of backlash following a number of poor performances and poor results at the start of this season.
Yeah, I mean, I do think, again, we spoke about it last time, I do think we've went backwards so far this season. I think we seem to have became far more cautious, you know, less likely to, you know, just be a bit braver, a wee bit, you know, take a few more risks, if you like. Sorry, I've got my colds catching up me here. You know, I don't know, it just seems, I think all the good points of Stephen Robinson's side last season in terms of, you know, that never say die attitude, the, you know, yeah, we didn't play fantastic football, but we were battling hard, and you got the impression that the intention was then to move forward from that, to maybe then inject a little bit of football. Stephen Robinson himself, the way he conducted himself in interviews, you know, his patter in press conferences, particularly surrounding the Ryan Bowman elbow, when he, you know, sat down and had all these stats. You know, I thought he was fantastic, and it just feels as though we've went slightly backwards, both in terms of as a team. I think we, you know, were far less entertaining. Not that we weren't even particularly entertaining last season, but you know, when you kind of, I know a lot of people in Steelman Online, for example, have analysed the results from last season, or the, you know, the second half of last season and then the first half of this season or whatever, and kind of suggested that we haven't really improved or anything. It's just been the same. You know, the idea that the cup finals kind of glossed over a terrible season last year. I think, you know, by anybody, I think that's been far too harsh. If you finish seventh and get to two cup finals, you've had a successful year. And I do feel as though we've went backwards. I don't know why that is. It just feels as though we're far more cautious. You know, it's almost as though we've lost a lot of confidence, not just as a team, but also as a management team. I think we go into games a lot more worried about the opposition. Even our transfer signings, you know, the idea of boosting the 12 to the 18 rather than looking to improve the first team. The style of play, I think, has got worse. You know, I don't want to start to get really negative, but it does feel that the, you know, from the summer into this point, it feels like a backward step, which is what I'd said last week and you know, said earlier. You know, we really need to see an improvement now from now into the end of the season. You know, it looks as though we're probably odds-on favourite now to finish ninth. I think challenging for the top six is by and gone. You know, I think we can safely say that that's off the agenda. Even seventh and eighth might be a bit of a stretch, but I think we would all accept that we're now good enough to consider ourselves maybe not completely safe from relegation, but it's looking unlikely. So if we're going to, you know, if we're going to finish ninth, let's at least try and do it a little bit more entertaining, because I think we can all agree that we're even losing fans. There are folk who aren't even coming to Fir Park anymore just because the style of football is that bad. And I think that's the issue for me. You know, we're sitting here, we're relatively safe from relegation. We've just signed Ross McCormick. We can be positive. We can look forward. But we need to see the changes from the manager in terms of the teams we put out, the way we play football, the personnel he's picking. You know, we've went from the great press conferences and the patter about Ryan Bowman and the stats and, you know, the kind of stuff that made you proud to be a Motherwell fan, to quite a lot of excuses about budget and about being forced to play too many footballers and all that kind of thing. So it's time to kind of, we've got a wee gap here, a wee space during the season to regroup, get some new faces in. And I'd like to now see us go back to that, because if, as I keep repeating, if we continue to do what we're doing this season, then we're just going to shit fest it, finish ninth or 10th, and folk are going to lose interest before the summer. And then in the summer, I think that you've got a genuine issue regarding the manager's future, because I think it's at that point you start to think, well, what is the point here? So yeah, I don't want to get too negative, but I think if you actually compare Even those who say that the cup finals glossed over a poor league campaign last year, I think they finished seventh and still look as though we had something about the side. It was still far better than where we are now, and it's time for big, big improvements because we have went backwards, from August until now.
Just to add on that as well, because I think Jay's hit every nail right in the head there. But the one thing I would not so much pick up on, but last season when we were all about the hustle and bustle, that was entertaining for me. You know, it would be great if we were playing 85 yard passes and then scoring a goal, but you know, there's other ways of enjoying football. And I thought that although we were very direct, we were probably very aggressive. Aggressive is maybe the right word, but in your face, you know, winning the ball at the park, and that was exciting. That was entertaining. And I think we've said that a few times over the last months. It's all about being entertained. As Jay says, you know, some people don't come because they aren't being entertained. Some people come and then leave after 25, 30 minutes because they'd rather be doing something else. And as I say, Jay's hurt everything bang on there. So it's just the signing of Ross McCormick would make you think that we were looking at, again, playing a bit more football. I don't imagine that, you know, we'd be thinking of punting the ball 60 yards for him to try and bring down. So I think that offers a wee sort of a bit of light at the end of the tunnel in regards to the style of football. So a bit like Jay, that's what we're really looking for, a bit more entertainment and a, you know, a bit of a cup run, I suppose.
First, I was going to ask, the year obviously started with Lou Moll leaving for Preston. We lost Cedric Kipre, a massive player for us in the summer, to Wigan Athletic. We'll possibly remember 2018 as the year we lost two pivotal players, but also managed to bring in good fees for players that were inevitably going to move on to bigger, and whether you regard it as better things, it certainly will be in terms of both players' bank balances and possibly future careers in terms of moves further down the line. That has been a big thing for Stephen Robinson to deal with as well, hasn't it? He obviously brought in guys like Tom Aldred, Nadia Chief G, Curtis Main, and the January, and recovered and steered us through that. He hasn't done so well and guided us through the summer transfer window. So we're coming up to a kind of another tipping point, I guess, where Stephen Robinson has to prove his worth and prove his ability to attract players, attract good players who will come in and do a job. I don't think we look at Louis Moe and Cedric Kipre and think they're leaving, so we're going to need to get a like for like, because it's just going to be impossible to replace these guys. But you want somewhere at that standard and guys that you can get excited about, and that would make a big difference. Ross McCormack is the kind of player punters are going to want to come to Fir Park and see Ross McCormack play. A few more like that would be pretty nice going into the new year.
That would be unreal, to be honest with you. You know, as you says, losing William Oat, the guy was fantastic. His goals, you know, his record with scoring shows that that's irreplaceable. Cedric Kipre as well. Kipre was, I believe, second choice to the French guy who went to Ligue 2 or whatever it's called, instead of signing with us. And again, these were parts of the sort of transfer policy that we had set up, you know, bring these guys in who show they've got a bit of talent, develop them on and sell them on. And, you know, that is a kind of risky policy, because it's not going to work out every time. In the last 18 months or so, we happen to have had at least three great examples in Kipre, Moult and Ben Hennigan. Let's have him in there, because we got about 400 grand for him, if no, possibly more. I believe he's had a semi-decent season for Blackpool this year, and some teams were looking at him. So if we've got a sell on there, you know, that could also be a great thing for us as well. But Kipre, Moult, these guys are irreplaceable, especially with our sort of transfer policy. You know, it's very hard to pick up a like for like. We weren't going to do that. So to start the January transfer window, we bring in somebody like Ross McCormick, it shows intent. You know, there's probably going to be, as I say, if we sign three or four guys, there's probably going to be one of them who's not as big a hit as he or the team would like, or the you know, the coaching staff would like. But you know, that's any transfer's a risk. It doesn't matter how proven they are beforehand. We don't have the luxury of signing out and out proven footballers. So to start this way, we're bringing one in. It shows great intent, and as I said, and as Jay's said already three or four times, this guy's a footballer. We need to actually play football and, you know, help create chances. He'll create some chances himself, if no, you know, the majority are chances, but we need to actually get the ball down and play some football. It's all right going direct. It's all right, you know, getting up the park as quickly as possible. It's not all right lumping it for 20 yards inside your own half into the other opposition's box and seeing what happens, especially when you're playing against 2 6-foot-6 centre halves. So, you know, as I said, who knows who we're going to bring in here, but to start with a guy like Ross McCormick, I don't think we could have asked for a better player to bring in.
And so 2018, what would you say is the standout moment? I think there's a few obvious ones that I've mentioned. Is there anything else that kind of grabbed your attention and you'll kind of remember in the years to come?
Well, of 2018, it probably has to be, overall, it would probably have to be the Aberdeen semi-final. So, you know, Aberdeen, obviously, last year were pretty good going, as they've been the last couple of years, high-flying. So for us to walk right over the top of them was unreal, especially in a national trophy semi-final. So that probably has to be right up there. But one wee individual moment, you know, it'd have to be maybe Carol McHugh in the same competition, out of nowhere when he brings that down and volleys it in his bad foot into the top corner. You know, if I remember right, it was obviously one each, but if I remember right, I think Hearts had pulled one back, and I was thinking, we're never going to see this through here, and out of nowhere, that was absolutely fantastic. So obviously, if I had to choose the obvious moment at Aberdeen, I would say Carol McHugh.
Obvious, FJ.
Well, it's difficult following that up because mine's is exactly the same. I think, in fairness, I think you would struggle big time to find any Motherwell fan that would disagree. But to be a wee bit more precise, I think Curtis Main's second goal in the Aberdeen game. You know, obviously when he breaks away, you know, you had that long spell just as he's breaking through with the keeper to beat. It's the only goal of the game that's in front of the Motherwell end. And obviously when that goes in, you know that's it beyond, you know, there's no chance Aberdeen are coming back. So, you know, if I had to pick one moment, it was the ball hitting the net for Curtis Main to make it 3-0 at Hampden.
And it seemed like 3 seconds, but that wee sort of half second of silence as he kicks it and it hits the net. That's unreal, to be fair. That's a great choice, I know. What about yourself, Sparra?
I'd have to say that the semi-final, that was brilliant. In terms of the league, there's not really been, it's been slim pickings, I suppose, but I did really enjoy the Aberdeen game at Fir Park towards the end of the year, which is surprising given how dismal this season has been. Well, suddenly everything just clicked and Danny Johnson came back into the team and put in a brilliant performance. That was a tremendous display in amongst all the dross that we've seen so far this season. But certainly, beating Hearts is always great, let's be honest. But the Aberdeen semi-final and reaching a second successive final, it just seems so unlikely that we could produce anything like that. So,
well, if I'm going to pick a league moment, it's going to be this season. Peter Hartley getting absolute dog's abuse for a week, laughing at Rangers weeping, and then scoring a last minute equaliser at Fir Park to get it right up them. That would probably be a league one.
I'll not kind of do the disappointments because, as I say,
there's been plenty.
Yeah, we know about them, aye.
We've discussed them in depth and then only did a half-hour podcast after we finally won another week, so that's that wasn't very fair. In terms of looking ahead to this year, I guess it's the usual, isn't it? it'd be nice to have a cup run. That's the kind of boring chat that we possibly come out with in every preview of the year ahead. Is there anything else that kind of stands out? I would quite like to see us winning the Scottish Cup and have a story of the match of that. That would be a good moment. But is there anything daft that you want to see? Is there anything fairly simple that doesn't happen at the moment? Anything well, jump out, guys?
No, really, no. As we've said, we're sort of. I'm looking at it now, and we'll ignore Hamilton, right? So St Mirren are 9 points behind us. Hibs are 8 points ahead of us. Hibs are a bigger club with more resources, so you probably expect them to pick it up a wee bit. I would like to see us catch and overtake Livingston. And again, no disrespect to Livingston, because they're obviously doing much better, well, better than us so far this year. But like that, you've always got that wee thought in your head that they're going to fall away. So presuming that we don't, you know, the Arse doesn't fall out our league form, or I don't think we've got league form, but you know, presuming that we improve on our league form, I'd like to see us catch Livingston. That's it, really. You know, winning the Scottish Cup would obviously be all right, but catching Livingston would probably be the highlight of the year for me if both of the things happened.
For me, it's just as I keep saying, it's just about being more confident, I suppose. Just actually stop shiting ourselves when we're going into games. You know, be more expansive, play with wingers, have confidence that we can create chances and score goals. Don't think that having to play footballers is necessarily a bad thing. Actually go and try and make the best use you possibly can of someone like Ross McCormick. I think that we are possibly destined to finish ninth, or at least that is certainly the way it's currently looking. If we do improve the way we play in terms of our attacking and creativity, then perhaps we will go on to catch the likes of Livingston, because I would like to think that would give us a platform to go and get better results. And with better results, of course, you should be looking to climb the table. But for me, I think, I said earlier, I think we're probably going to avoid relegation by a reasonable distance. I think the teams above us will fancy their chances to stay ahead of us. So if we're going to be finishing ninth or there and thereabouts, then at least let's go and bring in Jake Hastie, bring in Adam Livingston, give the service to Ross McCormick. Don't be afraid to play footballers in the middle of the park, ditch the wing-backs. I just want to be entertained again going to Fir Park, because the reason that the Peter Hartley thing stands out isn't just because it was a perfect story, but it was also because it was one of very, very few moments in the league campaign where you actually felt as though you were being entertained. So for me, it's actually less about results, less about achievements, and more about actually making it enjoyable to watch Motherwell again. Because, as I agree with Buster, I think last season, although we were kind of kick and rush and wanted to be big and physical, there was still an entertainment to it. You still were proud that was your style. Whereas I don't think there's been a great deal to be proud of in terms of the Motherwell sides this year. And I think that's what it is for me for the end of the season. What will happen in terms of the league and the cup will happen. But let's at least actually be a bit braver. Go out, play a back four, play with wingers, create chances, and actually make use of your better players rather than shitting ourselves all the time.
Just as you brought it back to the sort of kick and rush, Motherwell cloggers sort of thing, do you think that Stevie Robinson and the coaching staff, whoever, do you think that they maybe believed too much of their own hype on that? Maybe not their own hype, but the hype that we were getting as a sort of kick and rush sort of team. We seem to drop the rush and just sort of try and stick with the kick it and kick players and see what happens. I think there's maybe a wee bit of, we believed that a bit too much and forgot that, we do actually have some players who can pass the ball, who can beat a man, who can do things other than, jump into somebody and win the ball.
No, I'd agree with that, because I think I was going to actually say, I'm sure at some point last season, probably more than one occasion, but I'm sure it was discussed by Stephen Robinson that, it was about, the first step in building the side was to, make us difficult to beat, make us determined, get the guys in with the mentality, make us physical. And then this season was going to be more about introducing footballers and trying to get a more of an attacking edge. And I think you're right, because we've completely ditched that plan.
Well, I think, see, on that, as again, I think when Robo first came in and he obviously had a save us for relegation sort of thing. That's it. He said that, exactly said that. We have to be difficult, we have to do this, we have to do that. And I think then, as you say, the season after was when we obviously got to the two cup finals. The league form, as you say, was sketchy, but you know, we improved on it a bit there, but then as you quite clearly says, we massively regressed. And I think it's, and as I say, I think it's because we believed too much of the make us difficult to beat, kick it and kick people, and you know, we forgot to actually do the footballing part.
Yeah, see, I actually think that it was a mentality that kind of was conveyed by the whole club at times as well. We were, all our output was all about bringing the fire and the fight and everything else. And it was just, it was maybe we get a bit too wrapped up in the whole idea of just the battle. That was always the word that was used, a battle. And you just wonder whether at that point the mentality just shifted away from, we've actually got a team here that could, they could do something, that they can play a wee bit. We can mix it up, but we have also the ability to win the games by just outplaying the opposition. Because I think you look back at that semi-final against Aberdeen, and that's, we've all voiced it as one of our best moments of the last year. Not only did we win the physical battle, but we also actually outplayed what was a very, very decent football side. So I think we kind of lost our way, and we let our identity kind of overrule what we were doing towards the back end of the season. I don't quite know who's to blame for that, because I think we've already admitted as well, we kind of get caught up in the whole,
yeah,
thunder and bring the battle type thing, because you like that. It's actually, there's nothing better than if your style of play is getting opposition fans wound up to the same tune as ours was, then we're definitely doing something right. So it's a difficult one. It's a difficult balancing act. But I think we just overemphasised it and over-egged it too much.
Yeah,
and it's come back to bite us in the arse somewhat.
As you say, you know, I think you quite rightly said the club, everybody in the club sort of bought it, and I believe that. But everybody involved with the club, ourselves as well, we were loving that. And as you say, it's just maybe even ourselves, until it became too much a bit of a shit fest. I think, you know, we all were loving it, and then we've just, as you say, got too involved, believed that's what we are, and forgotten how to play football, as I said, you know. So it's a new start. We've probably got, you know, has there been a more expensive player at Fir Park? You know, is there, I think Francis Jeffers was probably about the same amount, was he? Did he not go for an absolute fortune at one point as well?
Yeah, but, and in terms of cost, we've had quite a lot of overpaid players that could be considered as expensive in a kind of metaphorical sense, I suppose.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, you know, the fees are nothing to do with ourselves, but you know, he's what, 32 years old, we mentioned. He's not exactly on the way out. You know, he's probably just past his prime, but you know, he would probably walk into any team in this league. So it's a massive achievement for us to convince him to come and play for Mullow for the last half of the year.
We'll wrap up the podcast by looking ahead to that Ross County game in just under 2 weeks' time. First, they're a side that a Colts side came up against in the Iron Brew Cup. They're leading the way in the championship at the moment, although it's a very tight and competitive league, as it always is, the championship. County, obviously, a side that dropped out after a sustained period of time in the Premiership. It's hard a home game you could get out with playing a team in the top flight.
Yeah, as you say, you know, I think when a draw was made, we mentioned it at the time, it's not going to be easy. I'd like to think that we would progress, but as you say, it's going to be very difficult. I never seen the game with the, you know, the unders, the reserve team, the under 21s, whatever they are. So I don't know how strong a team Ross County had out. I don't know much about them, but as you say, you know, I know they're up and about the top of the league there, so it's going to be a difficult game. There's always talk about, you know, for example, over the last couple of years, I've heard Dundee United fans say the bottom of the league, you know, be it be us, Hamilton, St Mirren, whoever, there's a big difference in class between the top of the league and the bottom of the league. I don't really believe that to be true, based on absolutely nothing, to be honest with you, but, you know, I think there's three or four teams at the top of that league who could easily sit, you know, in our league pretty comfortably. You know, as I say, it'll be very, very difficult. I think that they've got Ian Vigers on their books, which always gives me the fear, because I was very critical of him. And the last time I think I seen him, he scored a volley for 25 yards for Inverness against us. So it's one of those things. But I'm not going to say we should be progressing, but I'd like to think we would.
And Jade, every cup run has to start somewhere, doesn't it? A couple of weeks break and hopefully get the guys back up to speed after what has been a very demanding festive period. They'll go to Tenerife, they'll have their warm weather training, they'll then return with their eyes on that Ross County game, and it's followed quickly by a home fixture against Hibs in the league as well. So it'll be right back to it. We need to be on our game right from the off, and if we can replicate last season where we came back and beat Hamilton in the Scottish Cup, managed to pick up a league form, then we could be in for a positive finish to the season.
Well, that's it. Last season is a good marker, you know, to look at. I know Ross McCormick even, you know, referenced that in his interview after signing, just the fact that it was, you know, after that January window that things started to pick up. So it's certainly possible. It's obviously difficult to really look at it in any great depth because, you know, is McCormick going to be fit with his knee injury by the time the game comes? Who will still be on our books? Who will we have brought in? Will the likes of McHugh, Dunn, will they be okay to play? There's so many ifs and buts in terms of even the team that we will put out on the day. But you know, Buster's right. It's a game that perhaps it's a little much to expect us to progress, because I think if you're going to get a lower league side, the team at the top of the Championship is the last one you want, for obvious reasons. They've got the momentum, they've got the confidence. You know, I think I would have rather had, although we were lost to them very recently, I think I would rather have had a Dundee or a St Mirren in particular, you know, at Fir Park, you know, in the cup, because I think that would actually be a more likely route to progression. I think Ross County will look at where we are in the table and will fancy their chances. I haven't seen any of them like Buster. I think the Ross County game against the Unders coincided with the, you know, I was in Albania. I think that's why I missed it. So I've not seen them. But it's a game that we should be confident. At the end of the day, when you're in a cup draw, you know, we all know that you can, you know, the luck of the draw is that as long as you kind of get a home tie. Yes, we all like an away day. I would have loved to have went up to County. You know, I'm missing it this season, you know, with them not being in the top flight. But in terms of progression, as long as it's a home tie, you give yourself a good advantage. And if we can get guys like McCormack fit by then we can go into the game with a lot of confidence. There'll be a wee bit of a buzz about it as well if he's playing, and hopefully that can spur us on to getting through to the next round.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll take a week's break following tonight's podcast, and we'll be back following the Ross County game. Looking forward to getting back, and that's even though we've only been away from it for 8 days. And all I did at the time was moan about the fact that there was FIBA coming up, so there's absolutely no logic to the mind of a football supporter. But guys, thank you very much for your time tonight. I've enjoyed it.
Cheers.
Well, thank you very much.
You've been listening to the NSCcast. We'll be back following Ross County in the Scottish Cup. Until then, thank you and goodbye.